Support for this podcast comes from Progressive, America's number one motorcycle insurer. Did you know riders who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $180 per year? That's a whole new pair of riding gloves and more. Quote today, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $178 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between October 2022 and September 2023. Potential savings will vary.
Here at the Almond Joy Factory, where tropical vibes abound, we use soft, fresh-tasting coconut.
The crunchiest almonds and delicious chocolate candy.
Ah, but do you know what our most important ingredient is?
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
Sometimes you don't.
Almond Joy's got nuts and something even way better than that. Yes, Almond Joy is made with almonds and joy.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, my next guest is a remarkable man. His childhood was spent in the East End of London, but he had the entrepreneurial fire in his belly. He was also drawn to the River Thames. His big break came when he was awarded the contract to ferry people to the Millennium Dome in London. His City Cruises company grew until it had 40 vessels in 2019, the year he stepped back from the company. All this is outlined in his new book, How to Make a Million in Business. It's really great to welcome Gary Beckwith to the show. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Now, I'm holding the book in my hand here. It's a really, really inspirational read, Gary. Tell us a little bit about your early years in East London. I know your father was involved in working on the Thames, but you didn't have it easy.
Well, Mum and Dad, we lived in Leighton, so we were brought up. So my football team's Leighton Orient, although most people know him as Leighton Orient Nil. And thanks for laughing. So Mum and Dad split up when I was eight. So I was an only child, apart from my brother and sister. And it was tough. By the time I left school, I was diagnosed dyslexic at 40.
Right.
Which was fantastic to know that, because I always thought that I was a little bit bright. I couldn't understand why I kept coming bottom, but I guess if you read the questions wrong, you're never going to get the right answer. So I joined the river when I left school, and then there was two men on the boat. You had the captain and the first mate, and the first mate was also the cabin boy and everything else as well. So that's how I started. The sad part about the River Thames at that time is containerization had come in, and all the people working on the docks, unfortunately, were not needed anymore.
Yeah.
So there was a massive unemployment issue with all the dockers. And I was entering that industry, and it was pretty tough. But
you actually took time out of the industry to you've worked in betting shops first and later in casinos. And again, that seemed to sharpen up your entrepreneurial exploits.
It did, yeah. I mean, I quite enjoyed the betting industry, because you only used to have to get in work an hour before racing, and most racing didn't start till 1 o'clock. So for me, that was quite good, because I was really enjoying being young and a teenager and getting out most nights. So that was really good. And then I transferred over to casinos, but I knew that to do it, I've got to save my money and kind of that's what I did. I worked hard, saved my money, and then came back. And yeah, Daddy was Royal Navy in World War II, and then demobbed, and then went Merchant Navy, and then to Trinity House.
The lighthouse people, yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones that look after all the navigation around the coast. So, and he did that, and you know, I got to saw Dad whenever I could. He lived over in Bermondsey, and we were living in Leighton, so it was a bit of a trek to go and see him. But and then he went on the River Thames, and he asked his friend to give me a job, and that's kind of how I got on the Thames. So
And tell me this then, did you come back then with a few quid from the casinos in Iran or wherever you were? And did that give you enough money to actually start?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I just, you know, there was nothing to spend your money on out abroad. So I just saved everything I possibly could.
Yeah.
And use that to start the business in the early days. So,
was there also a changing of, I suppose, how the tourists interacted with the river, Gary? Because now the river seems to be very central to all tourist activity in London. But maybe back in the 70s and early 80s, that wasn't the case.
Well, absolutely, especially downstream from Tower Bridge, because up to the river edge was warehouses, because that's where the ships came in and unloaded.
Yeah.
And of course, as the cargo changed, those warehouses were either knocked down and luxury flats put up, or they were converted into accommodation, whether that be offices, hotels, or flats, of course. So the river constantly changing. The River Thames has always constantly changed and upgraded. And yeah, I mean, you know, 1948, there was 3 bedrooms in hotels in Wales that had ensuite bathrooms. And today, you wouldn't dream of going into a hotel without an ensuite bathroom.
Yeah.
So, you know, tourism has been constantly changing. And
And tell me then about the evolution of your business. It started with like a floating warehouse. Is that right? And then you bought your first boat.
Nearly right. We started with a barge selling diesel, but quite quickly I realised we couldn't earn enough money selling diesel. So then we grew into selling canned beer, keg beer, and everything else. I mean, we were open all hours. I mean, right. they nicknamed me Grenville. You know, we was just trying to make a living, and then we bought a pleasure boat. And the pleasure boat could only run in the summer because it wasn't covered. So I realized then that summer boats are fantastic, but you can't. It just sucks all your money out in the winter. So the next boat was one that was covered that could run all year. And then we sold the beer and fuel business to a catering company. And they wanted to do the same as us. They wanted to expand and found that catering was okay, but they needed to get more money from their customers. And then we just moved into sightseeing boats, and
yeah,
I was just buying up everybody else's rubbish, really, the boats and the license to go with it.
And was there a lot of bureaucracy around, you know, getting permits and getting, like, surely that's, once you crack that bit and you've got a few quid to keep investing and buying more boats, but is there, knowing your way around, and, you know, you even talk about winning that dome contract being transitional in your business, but you must have known how the system worked to compete and win that contract.
Well, I did, but during my lifetime on the river, the piers were owned by the Port of London Authority, who gave you the license. And then the GLC said, no, PLA can't have that. We need to be running it through the GLC. And then the GLC was folded by the government. So then it went to the London Residual Body, and they were then running it. And then it went to Thames Water because they thought they were appropriate. Then Thames Water were privatised and realised that they couldn't own it. So then it went back to the PLA, and then the PLA only had it for a few minutes before the GLA took it over. And that's in my lifetime.
So you're answering my question. It is very complicated.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, knowing the industry and trying to work inside it, you're trying to run a business and all of a sudden you've got all this politics going on at the same time. And who knows about politics? You know, you've got to be in that game. But I learned quickly. And what I learned was that if you promise to build a new boat and invest heavily and tell them that you need to have some kind of length of license, then they were sympathetic. And that's kind of where we got to.
Gary, yeah. You sold the business in 2019. Again, what was that, difficult to do, or was that just something that you were always going to do?
Well, it's something I've been looking at for a long, long time, is what is the exit strategy, whether that's succession planning, whether that's to do a management. You know, most companies are not sold at the moment. They're normally vendor-funded management buy-ins.
Yeah.
You know, so someone's got Harry working for him. He's got no money. And the vendor says, well, listen, I need to go. You buy the business. This is your debt. And that's normally what happens. So I was looking at all those possibilities, whether the children were going to take it over and be part of the company going forward. And so what I was trying to do was get the business ready for sale or succession. And that was quite important to me to do that. But along the way, you needed to go and get a valuation, which was impossible to get a valuation on businesses. And we went to this company and we said, you know, we're thinking of selling. And they went, oh, well, you got boats. Well, they're not assets, they're liabilities. And I went, no, we've bought those. They went, yeah, but if you haven't got a contract with them, they're a liability. I said, well, I do have a contract. They said, well, the contract's worth more money than the asset. And that was a rude awakening.
Yeah.
And the guy said to me, you know, the people that would buy your company can buy any company in the world. Why would they buy you? And that's real. That brought everything, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Really.
And tell me one last question for you, Gary. Life after the business. You've written a book. Is there another business in you? Is there another book in you? What next?
Yeah, I've penned a second book, and the second book, you'll have to stop me. The title is How to Make More Millions in Business by the author of How to Make a Million in Business.
Well, that's going to sell for sure. The title alone will sell that.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're just doing. My wife's not well, unfortunately. She's got Alzheimer's and vascular dementia. So all my time is taken up with her. And she's just, so I feel, you know, 42 years, I feel as I'm still on my honeymoon. The lady's magnificent. She's phenomenal.
Well done and well said. Gary, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Really great to talk to somebody who's done it and come up the hard way. And every congratulations on your success. That's Gary Beckwith there, the author of How to Make a Million in Business, and the soon-to-be author of How to Make More Millions in Business by the guy who wrote How to Make a Million in Business. There you go, Gary. Nice to talk to you today.
And you, sir. Thank you.
Cheers.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Here at the Almond Joy Factory, where tropical vibes abound, we use soft, fresh-tasting coconut.
The crunchiest almonds and delicious chocolate candy.
Ah, but do you know what our most important ingredient is?
Sometimes you feel like a nut.
Sometimes you don't.
Almond Joy's got nuts and something even way better than that. Yes, Almond Joy is made with almonds and joy.